Okay then, we might kick this off then, so welcome everybody. My name's Tim Chambers, I'll be chairing this session today, and the topic of interest today is funeral cover, is there another way? So Robert Sorbello will be presenting on this. I think the paper will go onto the website after this. Robert's been a pricing actuary at Swiss Re since 2010. His work involves pricing, design and monitoring of a broad range of life insurance products across Australia and New Zealand, including direct insurance products such as funeral covers. And prior to Swiss, Robert worked in actuarial consulting for a number of years. He participated in the 2011 FSC Future Leaders Programme and has a combined actuarial studies commerce degree from ANU, where he had first class honours for research into reverse mortgages products. So we'll get underway. Now, I think you know the drill here. You've been to enough of these sessions already. So if we're going to have about 35 minutes of presentation, and then we'll have questions and answers. If you have a question, could you do it at the mic, and could you say your name, and if you're with a company, who the company is? Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Tim. So, welcome, everyone. Thanks for coming. Funeral cover. So it's quite topical at the moment. I'm sure everyone's familiar with it. But I think it's time to sit back and maybe just start rethinking a little bit about what we're doing with this. And we've got a few ideas here, and we'll explore those. And then I'll be interested to see at the end if there's any other comments. And it's not meant to be exhaustive, what I've come up with. So it'll just be interesting to see if anyone else has any other comments or thoughts about how to take this forward. So just before we kick off, I thought I'd just start with a little clip just to remind all of us what this product is about and how it works. So I'll just kick this off. My mouse is gone.
You know, sooner or later, all of us have to go. You know what I mean. Me? Well, I'm not too worried. When my time's up, I'm ready. You see, I have AA Life Funeral Cover. And for me, that's important because I've known and trusted the AA all my life. They gave me a policy on the spot. Their guaranteed acceptance means there are no health questions or medical checks. They can pay out directly to my loved ones, and that's important too because it goes straight to the people who need it. Let's face it, funerals aren't cheap. And that's another thing. The money's for the funeral, so really it's needed straight away, not next month. That's why AA Life pay out within 48 hours of your claim being accepted. It's pretty affordable already, but if you call now, you'll find out how you can save up to 17% on your premiums, as well as get your first month's premium free. So go on, call 0800-225-244 and trust AA Life for the costs of your last trip.
So, yeah, I think we are all pretty familiar with the type of products. You know, you get the attractive retirees out and modelling as they do. In a snapshot, I suppose, he set it out pretty well there, but we've got, you know, simple covers, guaranteed issue, so sort of hassle-free, low sums insured, and, you know, it has done a good job, I think, over the last sort of 10 years or so since the products have really been gathering steam. You know, they provided cover to a range of people who wouldn't have otherwise had cover. Now, a number of concerns have been raised in the media and such over the last sort of probably 24 months or so. So it's sort of time to start thinking about what some of those are, and we'll have a look at that. For me, though, I think it is worth doing that now because the cover is only going to, I guess the demand for the cover is only going to continue to grow. I think, you know, with ageing population and all the further, you know, demand or underinsurance, if you like, we'll definitely, you know, have a need for this or some type of cover for people going into their retirement going forward. So what explicitly we're sort of just going to cover off today, the major concerns, so we'll just sort of step through those briefly. It's then going to be, you know, what are the couple of options that we have available to address them? As I said, so it's going to be some ideas that I've been thinking of, but it's not exhaustive, and please feel free to step in later and chime in with your two cents worth. And then at the same time, if we start doing some of these things, what are we giving up? Are we sacrificing anything? Because, you know, as I said, it is simple, and you know, it the cover has you know, to a large degree served a purpose. And if we start chopping and changing and tinkering with it too much in the wrong way, is that really going to undermine or undo the benefits that we've gotten up to this point? So that's the thing to keep in mind as we're exploring some of these options. So some of the common concerns. What do we usually hear about this? What are people worried about? So you hear all these things that the premium becomes more unaffordable with time. It just keeps getting more expensive. It climbs up and up. If you cancel your cover, you get nothing back. You know, you've been in it for 5 years or 10 years, and you got nothing. It's too expensive. You're better off putting your money in the bank. I saw a video on YouTube the other day, which was actually done by a financial advisor, and he calls it funeral insurance, the great Australian ripoff. So it's, you know, some people certainly don't view it in the best light when it comes to affordability. The other one is you can end up paying more in premium than what you end up receiving at the end of the day. And this is, you know, this is probably one of the more typical ones that we see. And, you know, I pulled out one article recently from Choice, everyone's favourite consumer group, which, you know, has gone on to explain a bunch of things around funeral cover and what you can do and your options. And, you know, the typical thing they pull out is that your premiums can add up to 4 times the cost of the funeral by the time you eventually die or get to age 90. So those are the types of issues that we're sort of dealing with here. And it sort of makes you step back and think about it, doesn't it? So, you know, I often get asked, and we all often sort of get asked, you know, what do you think of these products, you know, at the end of the day? Would you recommend this to a family member? Would someone, you know, that you're close to or know well, and they ask you for advice, you know, would you actually offer them one of these products? And, you know, they keep hearing about, oh, you know, it's a rip-off and all this stuff. You know, what should really be telling them? So it's putting some of those concerns out there, I guess, and trying to now start to think of what should we do about that, and should we be starting to listening to some of these concerns and maybe trying to address them. So, coming onto the options, this is a couple of things that I've been thinking of, and I guess I put them into a couple of broad categories. The first one is products. So, what can we do with the product itself? So, some of the ideas there are around the way we pay the premiums. Premiums are paid, the underwriting, the benefits that we add. Contract terms, and also a bit more fundamentally around do we, you know, how long does the premiums get paid for, and whether you get anything back at the end of the day. So we'll explore a few of those options. The second segment is distribution. So the distribution of the product is a really a key feature as well. It's not just what the product actually looks like. It's how it's sold and who it's sold to, and we'll touch on some of those aspects. And then the final piece there is what I've called sort of communication. So, you know, for me, it's around, you know, getting the public and the advisors and the consumer groups, you know, more aware of what the product is, and, you know, what, yes, you know, it has these limitations, but also getting the full story, and this will sort of become clearer as we look through some of the options that I've explored, but, you know, perhaps the full story isn't always explained in some of these articles, and you know, are the consumer's outcomes always, you know, best explored? I think is the key piece there. So we'll explore that a little bit as well. So on to product modifications. Now, the premium is one of the key sort of features that gets analysed, and how it just sort of ramps up year after year. So the step premium model is what's behind that, and you know, that served us well on the standard life insurance side, I guess, for most of our day-to-day sort of products. When you move into this environment where we're selling to sort of retirees, their income isn't necessarily aligned very well with these steps, and it's the you know, sort of the level premium or the flat shape that probably matches better with the income of people in this age bracket, so the retirees and the pensioners. So there's sort of an intuitive appeal to maybe moving away from the step premiums and more towards the level premium options. Now, they are out there in the market. There is a couple of issues though with that. Part of it is that it's just more expensive, you know, at the beginning of the policy. So, you know, it becomes less of not as easy to sell when you've got a different option that would be cheaper in the beginning. And then the second sort of issue with that is that it's just misaligned with the risk. So I'll show you what I mean in a second. I've got another slide. But it doesn't match the actual profile of the claims that we expect to pay out on these products. So it's there, but it's not ideal. What's a third option here? Something I've just put out there is I guess a sort of modification of the standard stepped premium, and that's, I call it just got a modified stepped, I suppose, but it's where we could charge the premium by age steps, but then it would also vary by duration. And the point of that is that it would actually, compared to your ordinary stepped premium, would actually be lower in it'd be sort of a less steep shape than what we would normally see. Now, the idea of that is to flatten out the steepness that we see on the standard product, and that's one of the major concerns. The other one, though, is that if we can keep it above the claims cost, then we're also not exposing ourselves to as much of the risk of mismatching premiums and claims, and reducing the sort of capital strain that you can have on the level premium product. It sort of works akin to a loyalty bonus, if you like, where you're sort of, if you charged a step premium and then gave small discounts for every year that you held the policy, you know, that's effectively the same thing that we're doing here. So this is example of what I'm explaining about there. So the flat line is the level premium. The blue one sort of ramping right up there is what a typical step premium would look like. So this is just for a 60-year-old. And then the red dotted line comes out sort of red, sort of coming under the bottom is the claims profile. And so you sort of see around the mid-70s there is where the claims profile starts building up and crossing over the level premiums. And that's where we sort of start to get into territory where we're mismatching on a level basis. Now, the step premium always stays ahead of the claims cost, of course, so that's what it's designed to do. And then the third option is the dotted line there, which is the modified stepped, or the sort of the loyalty premium, if you like. Now, that is there to sort of achieve those couple of things, where it's sort of the best of both worlds, where we're really flattening out the steepness that we see on the step premium. And you can see how that's really ramping up in towards those older ages. So we really want to flatten that out. But at the same time, we don't want to get ourselves, you know, stuck too far underneath that red line as that ramps up as well. So that, that's where this comes in. It's just, you know, another way of thinking about the premium, and can we just tweak it so that we're sort of meeting both of our targets. So that's just one option to think about. Now, another option, which I think has some intuitive appeal to help reduce the cost of the policies to some degree, is underwriting. Now, obviously, a large appeal of the product is that it's simple and hassle-free. So whatever we do here, we don't want to, you know, overdo it or stress the customers too much by putting through, you know, rigorous forms or medicals or anything like that. So what are the couple of options that we can do that are fairly simple and straightforward? One of them is a PEC, or a pre-existing condition clause, which amounts to sort of underwriting at claims time. That's, that's a potential option, but it can be tricky and involve investigations and so forth. A second option is just a short form. So we give them three or four quick, hopefully easy questions. And the idea with that is that we can hopefully bring down the cost for the majority of people who pass and get through. And then the rest of them, we can still have some options to offer them cover. We don't have to completely shut them out. We can apply a loading exclusion, extend their accident-only period, so from 1 year to 3 or 4 years or whatever. Or we can just put them into separate products, still leave them in a guaranteed acceptance product. Now, it is being done. In the US, around 40% of their funeral plan-type policies are actually sold through some sort of short form. So it is out there. And it just gives us that option to hopefully, you know, reduce the costs to some degree for the bulk of the membership. And at the end of the day, we don't want to be covering people who are, you know, very ill already and are just not going to be great risks for us to take on and who just, you know, shouldn't be offered amounts of cover. So we're trying to just bring down the cost for the most of the policies, and then hopefully those that are still in poor health, we can still offer them something, but we need to tweak that in some way. Obviously, the costs of administering the policy are a key, and we don't want this to create a burden for ourselves in the industry in offering this, and so hopefully just keeping that really short, simple, quick and easy is the key for this. Additional benefits. So we sort of see a lot of these coming onto the products from time to time. So this is your free cover periods or your accidental death 2 times cover, 3 times cover, that type of thing. Now, I guess the issue with that is that it just starts to add up. So we have the example there, it can be up to 10% extra claims costs just from adding a 3 times accident benefit. And really, it doesn't really match to what the consumer actually needs. They don't need 3 times more cover because they died of an accident. It just doesn't really match the need. So I think it is probably time to maybe rethink some of those. Obviously the flip side is that it probably has a marketing appeal. So we need to balance out whether we feel we're getting the benefits of that marketing from having these types of frills and bells and whistles against what the costs of these are really adding on to the product. Now, the call this contract terms, but I guess it's more exploring a bit of a broader theme about just trying to get people more engaged in the product and in it for the long term. We know that lapses are very high, so you can often have 40% or around that range lapses in the first year, and then it stays high for a couple of years. and then you know that creates an issue for everyone. It's it makes it more expensive to produce, amongst other things. So the point I'm trying to get across here is that we need to just think a bit more sort of long term about this. Really, what's the need that these people have is to lock, you know, some security to be able to pay for their funeral, and that is really a certain event. They should be looking to get something now which sort of secures them into that for the future. And, you know, having them sort of dip in and dip out of different policies and things is not actually in their interest, and it's not in a provider's interest either, having policies turned on and off all the time. So is there a way to sort of get them, you know, more committed and locked into this product? And I would, you know, just throwing something out there is to have longer contract terms. So rather than sort of an annual renewable, you make it 2 years or 3 years or something. Or I guess the analogy there is the prepaid funerals, which, or the funeral bonds, which we'll sort of also talk about later. But what we have there is the people actually today will set aside their money to prepay their whole funeral, and this could be in 20 or 30 years' time. And they're really locking themselves in there because they can't access the money, and it's locked away. And I wouldn't see the insurance as being, you know, that different of a concept. If someone's committed themselves to purchase this product and they're trying to secure funding for their funeral, then really they should be of the same mindset that I'm happy to engage into this product and lock it away for 20 or 30 years' time. So it's trying to have that longer-term mindset around it, and what can we do to encourage that rather than, you know, having people lapsing in and out and constantly switching policies, that type of thing. Now, getting onto sort of other products, sort of modifications. We have a couple of these in the market already. So I'll start off with the sort of the caps, if is one way of calling it, the premium cap. Where these come in is to put a limit on the amount of premiums that you pay, so that it limits at the sum insured that you've taken. So if you've taken 5,000 sum insured, once you reach your 5,000, you stop. And you know that's a good thing from the consumer point of view. It's preventing that issue of paying the four times the premium or whatever that can actually come up. What that can do is push some of the cost earlier into the policy, and then it does change the cross subsidies and things about who ends up paying for that cap. But you know that option is out there, and a number of providers are doing that. It does have intuitive appeal again, and I think if we sort of look at that as a market-wide standard, and really everyone ended up moving to that type of model, then you know hopefully that could really have an impact in addressing one of these major concerns. Because you know, as I said, with a lot of these articles, you usually hear that the main issue that comes out is the premium. You know, we end up paying for our funeral six times over. So there are ways to do that. I'll also come back to that later in terms of the distribution about the cap. The second piece I wanted to just touch on there is on surrender values. So this is where we can look to design the product or change the product in some way so that people do start to get something back from it. Because again, one of those common concerns that you can be in it for 10 years or more and not get anything back if, you know, unfortunately after the 10 years you can't pay the premiums anymore. So what's a way of doing that? One way is to have some sort of return of premium in built into the product. And so I've got a quick example on the next slide, which I'm just going to show, which just explores what if we set up a product like that and what does it look like. The appeal to this type of change or product is that it's got the insurance component, but also this sort of savings element. So it's trying to, again, be a bit of that best of both worlds situation. The downside, of course, which there would always be, is that you do pay for this. So compared to a standard insurance product, you're going to be paying a bit more in order to get this kind of a feature. So again, and this is one of the issues that we have, that if people want to have affordable cover and meet all of their needs, that in order to have all these features, there's going to be a cost to it. So this is the option, or the example that I put together. It's just a pretty rough and ready thing, so don't grill me on the assumptions or anything like that too hard, please. But what I've tried to do here is just look at a couple of the standard ways that we could set up a product. So we've got an age 60-year-old male taking out $5,000 worth of cover, and under the alternative product design, they'd be getting 50% of their premium back at any time if they lapse the policy. So what does that mean if we compare it to the other alternatives? Under a standard policy, so what your product might look like is that you'd have $250 a premium per annum. So this is assuming a level premium. You pay that until you're age 90. You'd get your full payout if you died earlier. If you didn't, then and if you happened to lapse before you reached age 90, you get nothing. So we're all sort of familiar with that. The alternative is where you'd pay a bit more. So I've come up with $320 here for this alternative design, and here is where you would still go up to age 90. You'd get the full death benefit, but then you would get something back at any time if you weren't able to afford your premiums. So you'd get half your premium back in this instance, and that's what you're paying for. And so this is just trying to tease out maybe what that would look like if we set up that type of product. The third one is the funeral bond, or the prepaid funeral. And if we looked at this product by paying it by installments, and we tried to get our $5,000 funeral paid for, if we did that at about $250, again the same as the standard, we'd be able to get there within 17 years. Now, obviously, that ends up being the cheapest option, and that's what's always talked about sort of in the media when they're comparing all these different products. But I guess it's a simple fact, but they don't always explain that in detail, is that, that just really operates like a bank account. You're not going to get the full benefit there if you die beforehand. You'll only get what you put in. And then the same if you lapse. So if it's, 3 or 4, 5 years, and then you do pass away, then you'll only get 2 or 3 years worth of what you've put into it. And it's really having that end-to-end coverage, which I think seems to get missed in the communication of the different alternatives, and in the can get missed in the media. So that's what I wanted to tease out. It's just looking at some of these alternatives and I think explaining to people that there are different options available, and some will cost this much and some will cost a bit more, but here's what you'll get under each of those, and then perhaps we should have a bit more of these options and let people decide what which type of option that they would like and would suit them. So that's the product sort of side of things, if you like. I wanted to move on to distribution now, where rather than just tinkering with the product and changing what we're doing there, we're talking about selling this and who we're selling it to, how we're selling it to them, and just maybe some of the different options and thinking that we can apply in this area. Now, currently, as we've seen, we do the TV advertisements, the direct mail, it's the magazines, all that type of stuff, and that's about as expensive as you could almost get. It's very costly to do, and that's reflected in the premium. And, you know, as I've said there, that the premium can end up being more than half made up of distribution costs, depending on how it's structured. Over 50% of the products still do mail-outs, and, you know, this does add up, and that's what we have to reflect in the cost. The industry has recently had has been a little bit of discussion around that, and you know, we know these, we recognise these costs are high, and what can we really do? Should we even be controlling the payments that we make in terms of distribution partners or setting minimum loss ratio standards to try and rein in the total cost? And yeah, you know, I'm not sure that's the route we should be going down yet. I would see that as a last resort, and hopefully we can explore a number of other options before we have to get there. I'd like to think we can hopefully work collaboratively with our distribution partners and as an insurance industry, and hopefully try and get, you know, some of the win-win outcomes of reducing their costs and bringing the premiums down for everyone before we have to, you know, move on to some of these other methods. But you know, it is sort of being bandied around as something that may be an option. Now, I wanted to just touch on who we're selling to. You know, for me, the key segment is the pensioners and the retirees and people who are, you know, don't have a huge amount of savings or liquid assets. It is a hard to reach market, and so that's why we've had to do a lot of the high cost TV advertising. But I think it is worth remembering that this is the key market for this product, and those are the ones who need it. And just a bit more focus perhaps on our distribution and marketing around, you know, just making sure that is on to this market, because, you know, you can get these products from age 18, and that quite a lot of policies sell from age 18 up to you know, sort of your retirement ages. Can be up to 20 or 30% of the policies can sell in those ages. And I would argue, you know, that there's other life products for these people, and really they shouldn't be settling for just $5,000 worth of cover. We should be getting them into proper life insurance products. And again, those people in those ages are more likely to run into the issues where they end up paying more in their premium than they'll receive in benefits. Because they're in the product for so long, it can just spiral and spiral, and they just keep paying more and more than they need to. So I think refocusing on the key segment here is important, and it will sort of feed into what I'm about to say as well, which is moving on to the channels. We obviously have our, you know, existing strategy of the direct marketing, and, you know, having the focus of who we're about to sell or who we want to sell to, I think that can help us in the second phase, which is, you know, focusing on where and how to target them. And it's, I think, you know, what we're doing has served us well, as I said, but it's costly. What can we do as alternatives to that? Now, it is a bit of a challenge because it is a hard-to-reach market, but I think we can start to think of some of the perhaps natural places that we can start to open up going forward. And I don't necessarily think these options are for today, but, you know, going forward in 3, 4, 5 years' time, as some of these options might start to open up and improve. Online is an obvious one. You know, hopefully we'll start to see more and more people of this, the key age demographic, starting to get more and more comfortable with buying products online. And, you know, I'd say in that, you know, 3 or 4, maybe 5 or even longer years' time, hopefully, you know, everyone you would expect would be reasonably comfortable in online purchases of products, will be using social media, will be logging on to claim for their health products and all that sort of thing, and those are opportunities to target these customers. And, you know, I hopefully see that as an opportunity to market these type of products, and hopefully in a more efficient way than the current, some of the current methods. The other one there is the children. So Tim was just saying before he bought a policy for his mother-in-law. So it's one of those areas where, you know, we know they're going to be online and they're going to be they're going to be there and you know, seeing these sorts of products potentially online as options to buy for their parents or, you know, or their in-laws or other people. And, you know, hopefully this is an area we can really start to explore more. And I'm sure some is already being done, but it's just ramping that up to the next level. What's that going to look like in a few years' time? The final one there is a sort of called a group cover. For now, I think of this as being something in around super, and where we have people who are moving into their retirement phase, into their drawdown phase. They'll be people who, you know, don't have a large balance, or perhaps, you know, they do have money in there but they don't have any liquid assets, and they feel like, you know, I'd like to have some sort of additional cover or additional policy that will help, you know, pay for my funeral if I need it. And as you know, the current group insurance covers sort of expire at about age 65 or 70, and they've really ramped down pretty quickly at that age. So is there something we can do there where we offer people, you know, as their standard insurance products tail off inside super and then they start to draw down their balance? Is there something where we can do where we can start offering them products and target the ones who, well, look, you know, they've got a low balance, they might need some extra protection. Can we offer them some sort of group funeral type offering? And, you know, intuitively, you know, it's got a feel to it where we can, you know, target a large number of people at one time, and hopefully that would be another option that would bring the cost down by achieving the scale benefits. So there's obviously a number of things you need to think about to get something like that to work, but I think thinking about that now and trying to vision what that might look like is, you know, at least worthwhile doing as a just a different option. So that's distribution. So this is, you know, some of the areas we can think about there. So just to wrap up, we've looked at what the concerns are, and I think you're all familiar with those. We've looked at ways that we can take the product and maybe make some changes and some tweaks that hopefully might bring some of the costs down or improve what some of the consumers are getting out of it. We've also looked at different ways that we might be able to think of channels or segments to sell the product going forward that might be more targeted and more effective. The key throughout all of that, if we do any of these things, as I was saying, is to make sure that the costs are affordable. It's still marketable and simple for people. So we need to keep that in mind throughout any of this that we do. And then the final point, again, was just the communication. So making sure that you know, the stakeholders, the consumer groups, public advisors are aware of the different options out there, that under this product, you know, you don't get all the benefits, whereas this one you do, but it costs, you know, this much more. So just being aware of some of those things. So I think it's very useful to have a lot more of us out there and saying some of these things. So, you know, perhaps some of us should get maybe on talkback radio or something like that and start getting out there a bit more and championing what we can do on explaining some of the differences or the benefits of different types of products. So For me, that I think that's really the key, wherever we end up heading with this, is to make sure everyone's well informed and aware of the situation. So with that, that's all we have. Is there any questions?
Thank you, Robert. As Robert said, I have taken out one of these contracts on my mother-in-law, but because of the 12-month waiting period, I've got to keep her alive for 12 months, but after that, all bets are off. Anyway, I'm just interested in what people's views are. That do they see this as a good product? Obviously, if you switch on the TV any time before about 5 o'clock, the advertisements are full of funeral cover ads. I think that the TV costs are very high. I think the claims cost, the percentage of premiums, probably under 25%. Are they good value for the consumer? It's also being sold to non-retirees, so young people. Is that, should a 35, 40-year-old person be buying a funeral cover? I don't know. But so interested in people's comments, thoughts, and questions for Robert. Who's up first? Anyone? If you could say your name and where you're from.
Sure, Janice Jones from PwC. Just interested in whether you think there's a natural affinity with the health insurance, the private health insurance market. I'm not sure if they currently distribute this product, but you'd think there'd be some element of, if I'm a low claimer on my private health insurance, there's nothing the health insurer can really do for me because of the community rating. But perhaps my funeral insurance could do something for me because I'm in good health. Might work best with the retirees rather than the younger people. That was one option. And then thinking about group policies with super, obviously a super fund can't give benefits that aren't directly related to retirement, but there must be a way of joint venturing or partnering and offering this type of product. Mm. And the super fund data, and we've talked a lot about data, there's got to be some data there about low income, low balance people with dependents that have, as far as the trustee knows, no ability to pay for these type of benefits.
Mm. Thanks. Yeah. So on health funds, I think there is a natural affinity with just insurance in general. We're starting to see that more, and most health funds have a number of offerings and a number of life insurance partners. And they do have that natural affinity. And, this product, I guess it is a bit different. It's a bit more final where you're sort of going with things. But I don't see why not. There isn't some sort of potential there. It is probably just about the marketing piece, I think, is probably the key, how we end up trying to market that to the customers alongside what they're currently doing. And I guess a lot of the trouble is probably that they're trying to market about improving health. So the challenge with this is it's kind of at the end of the line type of product. On the super side, it is again about the partnering aspect. So getting together with the funds and getting, if you can get access to their data, which again that's a bigger issue. I think that's improving. A lot more of the standards, APRA standards and so forth, that are coming out this year or coming out at the moment, should be helping us to get more data, better data, and hopefully that will lead in to be able to do more of this sort of analysis and what balance do people have, and actually trying to find out at the moment with some of the work that we do with super funds, and trying to find out even how many people are on low balances and perhaps going to be subject to consolidations or whatever. Even at the moment, trying to find out that sort of stuff is difficult. So we've got a fair bit of work to do there, but I'd certainly be keen to get more data on that.
Kirsten Armstrong from Three Rivers. I actually advise my parents strongly against having a funeral insurance product, and because I think there's obviously better alternatives because they can afford to put some money in a bank account. Yeah. And I guess I've got two questions related to that, one of which is if in your comparisons, do you actually allow for the different expense loadings for alternative products and actually compare the products you can put on the board with, say, for example, a prepaid funeral or putting the money in the bank account, and when you actually kind of break even or comparably break even, because I think that's a really important thing to do. The other thing is, I think I really question your underlying premise that there's going to be a growing need for this. And the reason I question that is that we've just invested all this effort over the last couple of decades in getting people to put money into superannuation. And now people have got a lot of liquid funds sitting around, so when they die, they've probably still got a lot of liquid funds sitting around as well. And isn't really the solution to actually make that more accessible to people so that they can use them to pay for funerals. So I do question the underlying premise of whether there's going to be a growing need for these, you know, sorts of relatively modest sum insured products.
Thanks. Yeah. On the first, I did try to roughly take into account what the current sort of structures are around the expenses and the different costs of those different pieces. So that should be reflected in what's in there. but you know, yeah, it is true that you have a lot higher loadings in offering the insurance product, and I think that's, I guess, hopefully that came across in some of the other messages that we're trying to, I'd like to, you know, work or think of different ways of making that more affordable and cutting into that piece that we're spending on all these extra costs. Around the second point around super, yes, you know, of course, we're trying to put more and more money away for that. I think the point with this is that at the moment there's still, I've seen the statistic at some point, but I think it's at least 60, it's about 60 or maybe more than that percent of people are claiming some sort of age pension. And while that is going to improve, it's going to take a while. And before we get there, I think there's still going to be a big gap. And even then, we have, we have stuff like super, or if people put their savings into their home, where their money is tied up in an illiquid asset, and you know, for something like a funeral, if you need to be able to pay for that, it happens within a week, and trying to get the money that's tied up in a super fund or a house or anything like that, and trying to go through a whole process of getting access to that, can be really difficult and time-consuming, and I think having this option as a fast liquid option may still be relevant, even, you know, whether people do have enough balances in their fund. So, it'd be interesting to see at least going forward, and I think it's going to take a while, but possibly, you know, 15, 20 years down the track, maybe everyone's built up enough. Maybe we don't need to have as many of these things, but yeah.
Margaret Gardner, Tao. We've been saying this for years, actually, that people wouldn't need insurance past 65. I mean, the idea was that you invested in term and, I mean, you bought term and invested the difference. The trouble is none of us have invested the difference, so we haven't actually ended up with enough money to pay things like funeral costs because we just can't seem to manage to do that. When I look at it, your first question, is it worth it? Well, yes, if that's the only way you can get insurance. But if I compare somebody who was able to be underwritten at 30 and is paying a premium at 65 with the cost of the funeral cover, there's no doubt it's cheaper to have the premium where you are underwritten at age 30, even though your health might now be very little different. I sort of did some costings on it. So in some ways it isn't worth it, but it still continues to surprise me the number of people who still seem to need to buy this sort of insurance. There's no doubt too, if you live long enough, much better to put your money in the bank if you don't spend it, because the insurance company's costs are so much higher than the ones you have putting it in a bank account. So the other thing that worries me slightly is surrender values. For years, that has been a big bone of contention and a big problem. And I'm loath to go back to them when, for whole of life, surrender values, in fact, increased three-quarters of the problem. I mean, whole of life non-profit is actually just term insurance for the whole of your life, level term insurance. But people still don't understand that. And, you know, if they bought level term insurance at 30 and it was still level at, you know, for the rest of your life, which effectively means a surrender value has to be paid, they actually aren't paying the full amount ever in the policies that I've looked at, but it still doesn't make anyone happy.
Thanks. Yeah, I'll just quickly... yeah, I think I agree, you know, with most of your comments there. The challenge is obviously just that marketing, and it's a whole broader life insurance industry issue, that whether we can actually get people to buy the right products for them at the right stage of their life. So I think there's still an awful lot of work to do around that going forward. So,
all right, I think our time is up, so thank you, Robert, and perhaps we can just say thank you to Robert for all his hard work and effort on the